From LPL Financial, welcome to Market Signals.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest LPL Market Signals podcast. Jeff Bookbinder here, your host for today, with my friend and colleague, Lawrence Gillum. How are you today, Lawrence?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jeff. Happy to be back on the podcast and happy to eventually talk about munis.
You know, I've said it before, I, as an equity strategist, have probably never been more interested in the bond market than I am right now. So good to be with you to make sense of not only what's going on in the muni market, but also with the Fed and that real big collapse in yields last week. So here, we'll just take a quick look at the disclosures. It is November 6th, 2023, Monday afternoon as we're recording this. And here's our agenda for today. We're going to start recapping that big move down in yields and the strong stock market rally that came with it. Next, talk a little bit about the Fed. Looks like they're done. That certainly is a consensus. So Lawrence, I'm hoping you'll tell me why we think that is the case. I'll do a quick earnings update. To be honest, it's not great the past week, but it's good enough. Next, the muni update that we just mentioned. And then lastly, preview a very quiet week on the economic calendar. So let's start with the best news. You know, I wish stocks could do this every week, Lawrence, but, and frankly, bonds. I wish bonds could do this every week too, because it was just a massive rally last week. Stocks up. The S&P is going for its sixth straight up day, I believe, today. Up every day last week, up 6%. Give or take on the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Russell 2000 did even better than that. Everything worked. Everything was higher. And you even saw the dollar weaken, which helped international equity markets. We've seen not only some decent gains in Europe, but we saw nice gains in Japan last week as well. And even, you know, seeing some life out of emerging markets. So pretty much anything with risk attached to it did well. On the sector side, I think what's probably most interesting is how strong the regional banks were, right? We know regional banks have struggled since the Silicon Valley Bank failure and the other bank failures back in March. The banks really benefit from the sharp drop in rates. Remember, that's really why the banks failed to begin with. So you'll reverse that and take some of the pressure off of those regionals. So really strong week for financials, which is good to see. And then real estate too. Real estate's really gotten beat up. Tough year. A lot of folks are still worried about commercial real estate. And real estate, of course, is interest rate sensitive. So that has weighed on that sector as well. Well, those concerns were certainly eased some last week with the sharp drop in rates. So we saw huge gains in real estate. It was certainly better for the higher risk sectors than the lower risk sectors, but a little bit disappointing to see that energy was only up 2.4% as crude oil fell, which you'll see here on the next page. So, the energy complex, including oil and gas, down 2.4%. The good news there, well, there's two pieces of good news. Number one, the market still sees the Middle East conflict as remaining contained. And number two, that's good for the inflation picture and another reason why the Fed's probably getting a little bit more comfortable with the idea that they are done. So, Lawrence, check out these bond returns. You're going to tell us that this is kind of normal, right? We're going to continue to see 2% gains in the ag every week from here on out, right?
I wish that were the case, but to kind of carry over your everything rally, it was an everything rally in the fixed income markets as well because of that sharp fall in interest rates. Ag up about 2% last week. Mortgages, we've had an overweight to mortgage-backed securities in a lot of our discretionary asset allocation models. It was good to see mortgages outperform last week. They tend to be pretty rate sensitive, and with the elevated interest rate volatility over the last couple of years, they've kind of struggled a little bit, but it was good to see a sharp rebound in mortgage-backed securities outperforming high-yield bonds, which is interesting given the riskier segments of the equity markets that rallied. We actually saw some of the more risky segments within the fixed income markets underperform. So it was maybe a contrast to what we saw in the equity markets. But nonetheless, it was a good week across sectors. Investment grade corporate bonds up 2%, mortgages 2.9%, treasuries up 1.5%. And it looks like after this sharp reversal in yields last week, the ag, the treasury market may end up generating positive returns for the calendar year if this holds up. Of course, there's a long way to go. But something that we don't want to see is a third consecutive year of losses for treasury securities and or the aggregate bond index. The big rally that we saw last week kind of helps bring back some of those losses into more kind of a territory that can be overcome throughout the rest of the year if rates don't spike higher from current levels. So it was a good week for sure. I wish it was an every week occurrence, but I don't know that we can say that just yet.
Yeah, I don't think we can just post a recording of this podcast every week and call it a day. We'll have to keep doing new ones. Here's the chart of the S&P. You know, look at this V-shaped move here. I think the closing low last week was 41.17. Now we're 43.64 when we price this on, kind of midday Monday. That is a big move. And we just went from basically oversold to nearing overbought conditions in just the span of a couple of weeks. Kind of dizzying for the technicians to have to reverse course. It actually caught, I think, some CTAs, some trend followers, some, managed futures strategies, folks that really play these macro trends. They caught them off guard, frankly, not just the move in stocks that reversed so quickly, but the move in treasury. So we still think we can, get a little more out of this market between now and the end of the year. We've been talking about 4,400 as a goal. That seems reasonable given we have a seasonality tailwind. And, even though earnings season hasn't been great, it's been just fine relative to expectations. And if you get rates down, like they did last week, 30 basis points down, if you continue to see rates drift lower from here, that supports stock valuations. Of course, wild card is the Middle East. I'll let you weigh in on this, Lawrence, but it's just the opposite of the S&P 500 chart, right? Yields and stocks have been moving in the opposite direction here lately.
Yeah, and this you really could call last week's move lower in yields, a perfect storm in a good way of why yields fell. I don't know if we're going to talk about more about this later, but really there was three catalysts last week that drove yields lower. You had a Treasury Department announcement in terms of their quarterly refunding needs, and that came in better than market expectations. One of the reasons why we've seen yields higher over the last couple of weeks is the amount of Treasury debt coming to market or expected to come to market. Treasury Department came out last week and said that they were going to issue more bills and less coupon securities, so less longer maturity securities. Those longer maturity securities are harder to digest in the market. That was a positive catalyst for sure. Then you had a Federal Reserve meeting last week that it really went as expected, relatively uneventful. But during the 2:30 press conference, Chair Powell kind of confirmed that the risks of doing too much versus doing too little were really balanced at this point. So markets kind of took that as the Fed likely being done raising rates. And then finally, we got some weaker economic data last week. We've talked about the bond market pricing out the prospects of recession. Because we kept getting stronger than expected economic data. We've seen a more resilient U.S. economy, which is great news, not great news for fixed income, but great news nonetheless. But last week, we did see some softer economic data, what took some of that pressure off of yields. So we did see yields move pretty meaningfully lower over the past week. 10-year Treasury yields were down about 40 basis points, down about 50 basis points from those intraday highs that we saw when the 10-year Treasury yield touched around 5%, which seemed to spark a move in the buyer base to buy Treasuries at that level. But the 40, 45 basis point move lower in yields over the last week and a half has been it's been a kind of a a nice reprieve from the unrelenting move that we've seen over the past couple of months in higher yields. So definitely take it. Don't know how long it's going to last, but certainly excited for the move over the past week for sure.
Yeah, certainly the jobs report was part of that picture as well. I mean, you could even add to that. You know, the jobs report was pretty Goldilocks. I'll show you a chart of that in a minute. And then you had good productivity numbers as well. So this economy might be more productive than most had thought. And that allows you to grow with less inflation pressure. So add that to the list of positives. The UAW strikes are over. You've got probably a little bit of a kicker to the ISM now, right? Which was also weak last week. So, bad news is good news still, but what we got was really not that bad. It was kind of middle of the road news, we'll call it. And that really ended up being pretty Goldilocks for the market. So one of the reasons, Lawrence, I'm glad you're here, is you can explain to me why we think the Fed is done. You talked about it a little bit. The probabilities in the Fed funds futures markets are pretty close to zero, right? I mean, you can't totally ignore a 9% or a 6% chance of a rate hike, but it's a good bet that they are done, and then they'll probably start cutting maybe middle of the back half of next year. I mentioned the jobs report. Here's the picture. You have even though there's been these periodic spikes, kind of looks like an EKG, right? You have a steady downtrend for a few months, and then out of nowhere, you have gotten some pretty strong job reports. But that doesn't change the fact that this trend is down. There is clear evidence of a slowing job market. That job report on Friday was 150,000 jobs versus expectations of 180. Plus, you had over 100,000 jobs removed in revisions to prior months. So, further sort of solidifying this downtrend. You even had a little bit of an uptick in the unemployment rate. It's still very, very low at 3.9%. Of course, we don't want anybody to lose their job, but to get the Fed off our backs, we do need a little bit of an uptick in the unemployment rate. So it did that, just a tick higher, 3.9%. And then what some might argue would be the most important element of the jobs report is average hourly earnings, right? We had year over year slowing to 4.1. You can have a 2% inflation economy. We're not there yet, but we could get to a 2% inflation economy and still have wage growth in the mid threes. So, that's kind of historical average. So that that's not too far away. So this is good news, clearly a downtrend. This one's a lot more convincing, right? In March of 2022, we were running at almost 6% wage growth, now down to 4 year over year. And that's gonna have a 3 handle by the end of the year. This is good news. Still good wage growth that can support consumer spending, but good news for the Fed's outlook. So anything, Lawrence, you want to add on the Fed before we move on to earnings?
Just one other thing is that although the Fed is done potentially raising rates, they still are reducing the size of their balance sheet. So they are still kind of call it tightening, if you will. So I think that is going to take the pressure off the Fed to keep raising rates at this point. We think rates are probably sufficiently restrictive at these levels. And there's other ways to increase or make financial conditions tighten. And that's through the balance sheet and the reduction of the size of their balance sheet. They're letting $60 billion worth of Treasury securities roll off every month without replacing them. That does serve to tighten financial conditions. So, the Fed, we think, is not going to be a biggest story over the next, call it, couple quarters, as it was certainly over the last couple quarters, which should be good for markets, good for bond markets, good for stock markets. We'll talk about the muni market in just a second. But they've already done a lot. Right. So we don't think that they need to do too much more. As long as the balance sheet runoff is happening in the background, we think that the Fed is going to reach its 2% goal of its inflation target over time. It won't happen, this year or maybe not next year necessarily. But, they've made a lot of progress with their tightening campaign.
Yeah, they could sure make a run at that by the end of next year. We'll have to see. We'll have our 2024 outlook out in about 4 weeks, I think, now. something like that. So, thanks for that, Lawrence. I think the key point here is it's another piece of evidence that the Fed has done, because these cuts work with a lag, and they have the QT, you know, selling off bonds, shrinking their balance sheet, which is also going to help us get to that inflation target and get the Fed off our backs for good, which we all, of course, want. So let's move on to earnings. This is, frankly, it's not really as compelling as it was last week. I was really surprised last week at how strong the numbers were that I reported for you on the last podcast. But these numbers are still good relative to expectations. So especially the beat rate, 81% beat rate on the bottom line is outstanding. When earnings season began, personally, I thought we could do 4%. Now we're over that. So that is excellent. But it's been a little bit, disappointing that after that really strong start, we didn't add to it too much last week. And it's been a little disappointing that estimates have, started to see, bigger cuts than what we saw in the earlier part of earnings season. We're still kind of in a typical place, right? Typically, earnings estimates get cut by 2%. They've been cut by 1.2. That's forward four quarters. But the cuts have been concentrated in Q4. So people are talking about how Q4 estimates have been cut more than 2% and how that's a negative. It does lower the bar. It does point to a little less earnings momentum than we had hoped for. But frankly, it's pretty close to the norm. And it's positive that 2024 estimates have held up so well. So we're just going to call that a wash and say that, earnings season's generally been about in line with our expectations. It's been good enough, certainly, for stocks to rally, because we know what just happened last week. We talked about it. Essentially, earnings just got out of the way of the locomotive that was this rally in the bond market and, allowed stocks to go higher. It did not give stocks a reason to either slow down or go down. That's how I would put it here. So I'll turn it back to you, Lawrence, to talk about munis. I think, it's not an area that we talk a ton about, but, after I read your piece this week on LPL.com, the weekly market commentary, and saw your charts, I thought, wow, it sounds like a pretty compelling story for investors.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a tough area for investors. The muni market has gone under the same sort of stresses or pressures that a lot of these other taxable markets have seen. So through no fault of their own, muni investors are in the midst of one of the worst drawdowns for the muni market since the inception of the index, on pace for a second consecutive negative year for muni returns for the index, the national index, which has never happened before. So it's been a tough stretch for muni investors. We do think that stretch may be coming to an end. As we talked about, we think the Fed is done. At the end of Fed rate hiking campaigns, munis, just like other fixed income markets, tend to perform relatively well. What we're showing here is after-tax returns. So obviously, one of the benefits of owning munis is that the tax benefit. So to compare apples to apples, we're showing after-tax returns of munis, corporates, the aggregate bond market index, as well as treasuries. That first vertical line there is munis, and they tended to perform well on an after-tax basis, so apples to apples, after the Fed is done raising rates. So if indeed the Fed is done raising rates, like we think they are, that headwind that a lot of these fixed income markets experienced last year should at least abate, if not turn into a tailwind. So on average, the muni market was up about 9% over the next 12 months after the Fed's done raising rates, outperforming most other bond markets, including treasuries and the aggregate bond market index in general. So it's been a tough stretch of things, but the reason why we've had that tough stretch for muni investors is because primarily the Fed. So with hopefully the Fed getting out of the way, we could see the muni market start to trade on its own internal dynamics, which still remain pretty favorable. The next slide looks at seasonality. And I think a lot of fixed income investors aren't aware of some of the seasonality trends that we experience in the fixed income markets. in the muni market, it's typically because of favorable supply demand markets, or favorable supply demand dynamics, I should say, which means that there's not a lot of supply coming to market, particularly during the summer months, as well as towards the end of the year. So with supply coming, with supply expected to turn lower, meaning there's not a lot of bonds coming to market that the market needs to digest, that typically means that there's enough demand to keep prices well bid. And right now we're about to, or we're actually in that those the most favorable seasonals for the muni market. November, December, January, and February, to a certain extent, have less supply coming to market over these next couple months than they do typically throughout the year. And that has historically led to positive returns for muni investors. There's a lot going on in this chart, but the takeaway is the orange lines there represents the average monthly performance for each individual month on that that screen there. November, December, January, February tend to have strong positive returns, particularly November and December. So we could see a good year-end rally for the muni market, which would be a welcome reprieve, certainly from the drawdowns that a lot of muni investors have experienced over the last year and a half. And then the final chart we have in the weekly market commentary, it just looks at the default characteristics of munis versus corporates. On that first slide that we showed, that showed that corporates tend to outperform munis on an after-tax basis. But if we are entering into an economic slowdown, you'd rather own munis and not necessarily investment-grade corporates or high-yield corporates on the taxable side, just because munis don't default as frequently or as much as taxable alternatives on the corporate credit side. If you look at the 10-year cumulative default rate for all investment-grade rated munis, it's around zero. And if you look at just the U.S. Corporate credit markets, it's around 1.9% cumulative over that decade. It really sticks out, though, on the high-yield side of the ledger. Over the last 10 years, the cumulative default rate for high-yield munis has been about 4% versus 32.5% for high-yield the high-yield corporate market. So if there is, in fact, a slowdown and we do start to see defaults pick up a little bit, munis are a bit more defensive than these corporate alternatives on the taxable side. So, you know, we would argue that if we do, again, see an economic slowdown, which is kind of our expectation over the next couple of quarters, we expect the economy to slow a little bit. And if that is the case, munis could outperform most other fixed income markets on an after-tax basis because of the defensiveness of these securities. So that's the weekly market commentary on LPL.com. I haven't checked today to see if it's there yet, but by the time that this is out and released, I'm sure the weekly market commentary will be there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lawrence, you haven't done anything to reduce my enthusiasm for the bond market here. Certainly, in fact, when I saw that 32%, cumulative default rate for high yield corporates, I actually thought it was a typo comparing it to that 4% for high yield munis. That just seemed so dramatic, that difference there. So you're getting a really high quality, obviously, bond investment. And then on top of that, the tax savings, of course, is huge, and why many of you own munis. And then as we saw last week, you know, yields, we don't know where yields are going to be next month or next year, but there's certainly a decent chance that 5% holds on the 10-year and that we get, move lower in yields for all the reasons we talked about up front with the slowing economy and the Fed being done, potentially, most likely. Yeah, things are all starting to line up. So munis look pretty good. So definitely check out that piece. It's really a good one. And we know a lot of you out there are big fans of municipal bonds. So let's wrap up with a quick look at the week ahead. And this is going to be the most boring week ahead I think I've ever done. I mean, I thought that cumulative default rate was a typo. And then when I ran the economic calendar and I looked at it, I'm like, I thought that was a typo too. Like, where's everything else? So, but you know, this is it. I normally wouldn't even highlight the University of Michigan confidence surveys because you know, it's not typically market moving, but on this list of not much, this is all you get. and jobless claims you get every week. So I think what this tells you is that the Fed speakers and earnings are going to probably be more important than anything on the economic calendar. And we're just going to continue to watch the devastating headlines out of the Middle East. So, Lawrence, anything else? Either comments on the Fed speakers? I know Powell's speaking a couple times this week. Anything on that or any of this data that you want to try to prove that it actually matters to me?
Yeah, no. The traditional economic data isn't all that impressive this week. We have had a lot of economic data to digest over the past couple of weeks, so it is good to see a nice reprieve from a lot of economic data. I will say that the SLOOS, the Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey, SLOOS, is an important one. We're recording this as of November 6th. It's 2:30 now. That came out about 30 minutes ago, so we'll have to dig into that and see how that looks. And then, yeah, to your point, Fed speak, 12 Fed speaking engagements this week, two of which are Chair Powell. So, probably talk about higher for longer and the balance between rate hikes is more balanced now. So it should be a slow economic data week, but there are still some things that are worth watching.
Yeah, good point. The Senior Loan Officer Survey didn't make it onto this economic calendar for whatever reason. We will certainly be taking a look at that. The earnings, it's kind of a lull between, the big names that report and then the retailers. We always like to look at the retailer results for a read on the consumer. But that's not come, that's a month behind and we're not quite there yet. So 55 S&P 500 companies is a good number of companies. It's just, other than maybe Disney, there just aren't a lot of huge names that are going to generate a lot of, conversation or potentially move a sector. So I think we'll stop there unless you have any final remarks, Lawrence. Anything we missed?
No, I'm glad you didn't bring up your Chiefs and my Bucks, but other than that, no, everything is good.
Yeah, well, the Chiefs offense still leaves something to be desired, but it was good enough, I guess, to beat a really good Miami team. So yeah, sorry about the Bucks. It was a tough week for them. Hopefully all of you out there, your teams won this weekend. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful week. Thanks as always for listening to LPL Market Signals. Lawrence, thanks for joining Talking Fixed Income and not leaving me to walk through the muni market, which really would have been a complete disaster. So thanks again, everybody. Take care and we will see you next week.
This material was provided by LPL Financial, is for general information only, and is not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. There is no assurance that the views or strategies discussed are suitable for all investors or will yield positive outcomes. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Any economic forecasts set forth in the podcast may not develop as predicted and are subject to change. References to markets, asset classes, and sectors are generally regarding the corresponding market index. All indexes are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Index performance is not indicative of the performance of any investment. All performance reference is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All information referenced in the podcast is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA and SIPC, insurance products are offered through LPL or its licensed affiliates. To the extent you are receiving investment advice from a separately registered investment advisor that is not an LPL affiliate, please note LPL makes no representation with respect to such entity. If your financial professional is located at a bank or credit union, please note that the bank or credit union is not registered as a broker-dealer or investment advisor. These products and services are being offered through LPL or its affiliates, which are separate entities from and not affiliates of the bank or credit union. Securities insurance offered through LPL or its affiliates are not insured by the FDIC or NCUA or any government agency, not bank or credit union guaranteed, not bank or credit union deposit or obligations, and may lose value.